At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Smokey's Edibles now has the real deal Delta 9 edibles on their website. Order them now. Smokies.com. That's Smokies.com. Use promo code LEGENDARY for a discount and get yourself some Smokey's Edibles. Check them out. Bam.
Hey, I'm Bella Lexi, and I'm here for the Anthony Rogers Show, and we are about to walk into Chicago Exotica.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Sean from Smile Empty Soul here in beautiful St. Louis, Missouri at Firebrand Recording, which is a wonderful studio here, tracking our new record, Swan Song, which will start to be released one song at a time here in probably about June, and then the whole thing will come out at the end of the year. So keep your ears peeled for it and check it out when it comes out.
So I'm Dennis with the Anthony Rogers Show podcast. My question for you is, what would you do if you became president to help the working class?
Well, you know, I think the principal thing right now is housing. That the price of housing is going up, and it's beyond the reach of most American families.
Along with oil and gas and food.
Well, inflation is hurting everybody. And inflation is more complex. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I'm going to stop inflation overnight. What I can say is that I'm going to stop the long-term cause of inflation. I'm going to unravel a war machine. I'm going to reduce dramatically healthcare costs by ending the chronic disease.
Hey, it's your favorite comedian Anthony Rogers, live in his tour bus, yeah. But also, you need to get a beard like this. People have been talking. They said your shit looks whack. It looks weird. They can't tell your pronouns. You need to get a beard like this right now. And the only way to do that is by using Luxurious Bastard Beard Oil. Great smell, great function, great everything. Just get this. And there's directions on how to use it if you know how to read. But use the link in the description. Go to the website. Use promo code LEGENDARY. Get a discount. Do it. Thank you. Boom. Welcome back to the best podcast in the entire universe. Today we have a great guest. Wrote a book that seemed super fascinating. The story, from my perspective, and you can correct me if he's on here, he takes real stories and then adds a little bit of like Hollywood to it. I don't want to be wrong. Feel free to correct me when you come on here, but I feel like that's his writing style, and it's very cool. Ron Felber, we were talking before this, so we're gonna go straight into this. A great guy. How you doing, man?
Great to see you, Anthony.
Did I have that right? You take historical documents and stuff, and then turn it into more of a story.
Yeah, you know exactly. With this particular story, you know, it came from the Harvard Medical School library, so they had the archive, all the transcripts and everything. And so originally, I wanted to do it as a documentary, you know, word for word. But then it just came out like a medical textbook, and it was boring. But, you know, you really want to get the feeling of the people. You want to get if they're afraid, you want, you know, just the words by themselves need to be enhanced if you tell a story. And you know that, I mean, just from, you know, verbally, you tell stories, you know, you interview people and whatnot. It's kind of the way you present it. So the facts are the same, but it's the way you present it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I like the way you put that, man. And like, I clicked with your vibe right away. You have a really good vibe. It's very authentic. And I think we have the two most popular facial hairs. We have the beard and the mustache. So I mean, with our powers united, you know.
I think, we could do anything.
I think it's powerful. Yeah. So, okay. So this, your book, The Unwelcomed, was based on like a true life story of a demon possession. Like, what? Give me a little backstory on this without ruining your book, so people still buy it.
I'll tell you what. It's a great story from a couple levels. I was a student at Georgetown University in 1972 when they were filming The Exorcist. So I was a sophomore there. And so they had all the cameras and they had the fog machines and whatnot. And I was a writer even then. I'd written short stories, I'd written articles, and I had my first book, my first novel. So I said, you know, if I can get William Peter Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist and was, you know, working on the movie, to read my story, maybe he'll help me publish it. And so I did finally get to meet him, wow, give him the manuscript. I went back home for Thanksgiving vacation in New Jersey with my parents. I got a phone call from Bill Blatty. He said, let's meet. I like your book. And so he helped me with my writing. He was kind of a mentor. And he gave me this story. This was part of the research that he did for The Exorcist. There were two true stories. One of them happened at 1898 to 1904 in Boston with Harvard Medical School professors studying this case. And the other was a 14-year-old boy in Maryland. And so he took those two cases and, as we talked about, kind of dramatized them.
I like that, man. Like the original Exorcist story from like the film, I think, was actually based in St. Louis, where I'm from originally. That's where I lived most of the year.
The kid was from Maryland, but he was treated in St. Louis. That's correct. Okay. For the exorcisms took place, and the Jesuits from Georgetown were involved.
Okay, yeah, I saw that house. I did. I drove by it at some point. Just because I'm into, I'm not as into it as you are. Write a book on it, but into it enough to drive by the house. You know, I definitely
sure. Why not?
It's a crazy story, and like we were talking before. It's like, but what do you think? Do you think a lot of people are possessed by demons? Like, I tend to believe that.
You know, it's not exactly in my view. It's not exactly like people think. So The Exorcist was occasionally, and we'll get into that. There, you know, there are really demonstrative things where people, you know, their face changes, their voice changes, they speak in different languages, they have incredible strength, all of those things. But those are exceptions. I'll tell you what the rule is in terms of demonic possession. I used to be a deputy sheriff, and I transported federal prisoners.
I met guys that
killed 80 people. I met guys that have sat on somebody's chest and beaten their face to a bloody pulp. I met horrible people, people that have raped children, you know, awful, federal, terrible criminals. And a percentage of those were just malcontents, just, you know, screwed up people. But a percentage, maybe 1 or 2%, were demonically possessed, in my opinion. People that for example, and I don't want to, you know, get too graphic, but I guess I have to tell the story. But I met a biker that took a 14-year-old girl, chained her to a tree, and propane torched her to death.
Holy fuck.
Now, you've got to tell me that's a human mind and a human soul that does something like that. And the answer is it isn't. It isn't. So that's the more prevalent demonic possession. And of course, as we talked about with billionaires and people that just shift the world around at their will, I'm pretty sure that I can't say that I know a lot of them or met a lot of them, but I venture to say that a fair percentage of those people too, by my definition, really become evil incarnate. The devil walking around on earth incarnate through the bodies and minds of individuals.
Yeah, they seem to play on the insecurities and pain of their victims, and they seem to go after like people that in those positions, and like either really good people or really influential people or both. They tend to go for, and like I bartend sometimes, and like I don't drink that much, so I see all these people, and they just look possessed, bro. They look like they're bumping into people, spending all their money, doing all this stuff. I'm like, what is going on? Yes. I see that a lot, and I see like And like, yeah, you, I don't think demons are always like you have this deep voice and you're speaking Latin. I think it's just like they influence you to not choose God, to not do the right thing, to not do good, yes. to not be the light, to influence pain on other people to make them not like that. And that's how I view the losing team rather. That's how I view the unemployed angels and the losing team, as I call them.
Actually, one of the guys. So this is interesting. I wanted to mention this about the unwelcome. The woman, Clara Fowler, was a student at Radcliffe University, and then Harvard was very nearby, Harvard Medical School. So she displayed these signs of demonic possession, but she wanted to be a nun. So she was studying at Radcliffe, but when she graduated, she wanted to go into a convent and devote her life to God. And by the way, she had visitations. So she thought she had a calling because she had visitation, she claimed, from the Virgin Mary and from Jesus Christ. And so because of that, she felt she had a calling, and probably that's what one of the things that made her incredibly vulnerable to this situation.
I have chills right now. That was probably evil faking it, right?
Yeah, but to your point, so one of the members of the team that studied her, there was Morton Prince, who was a doctor, Dr. Morton Prince. William James was the inventor of abnormal psychology at Harvard Medical School. He had a protege named Waterman. And then there was Richard Hogson, who was a spiritualist and part of this team that studied the woman. And he was president of the Society for Psychical Researchers. Here's what he had to say. And this is just a quote from 1898 in a talk that he gave at Cambridge University. And it's a little hard to follow because the language is kind of old. But here, the one fact of demon possession so remarkable in our time is the power these hostile beings exert among men, and what they may, in far more subtle and less obvious ways, do to corrupt us. So, he sees the demon as an influencer, you know, that exerts this kind of magnetism on human beings and lures them into evil. And I mean, all of us are sinners, but I think at some point in time, certain individuals, and in my book, like Jack the Ripper, H.H. Holmes, some of the characters in this book, they surrender, they turn themselves over. So where you'll resist it and occasionally yield to a temptation, and I will, they say they're all in. I'm all in.
Yikes!
And that's when they become the devil.
That's there's a difference in and I think a lot of these people are in pain. Like when I talk to people that don't walk with God and don't see Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, they tend to be like mad at God about something they felt like he should have been there for. But I feel like they're blaming the wrong guy. I feel like the darkness is overtook the situation, and they go with that side that screwed them over, for lack of better terminology.
Yeah.
And like, I always wear a cross. I mean, they hate this stuff. I mean, I think evil hates all that stuff. And like, I couldn't imagine not being a man of God. And I mean, and like, to each your own, you know. I mean, not everybody's meant to be a winner, right? You know, I think it's terrifying, to be honest. The power we are truly up against, but it is beautiful, the power of Jesus that helps us get out of this. You know, I've only seen the word of Jesus and God both like scare darkness away. I've only seen that happen with their names. Like they tremble with those names. They do not like Christ. They are terrified of Christ.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, this woman, so there's the woman Clara Fowler, and then there's this demonic presence that occupies her. She has missing time, and during that missing time, the demon takes over.
Makes sense.
And when the demon takes over, she has no knowledge of it. She's, you know, in a different world, and this is controlling her mind and body. But it speaks in a languages that it couldn't possibly know, Latin, Greek, etc. And she had no way that she could possibly know those things. Had superhuman strength. Her face would remold into the face of a man. It would speak like a man, this, you know, rumbling, coarse, cadence. She had clairvoyance, so she would talk to the doctors and tell them what, for example, she would get violent and attack the doctors, and they'd have to restrain her. They'd have to have people there to restrain her.
Wow.
So what Prince eventually wound up doing, he called it etherizing. He would take ether and put it over her nose and mouth and knock her out. The demon would still be conscious, but the body would be knocked out.
Wow.
And so in that state, obviously the demon is angry because it's been restrained and being restrained. And so the body is falling down, and she says to Prince, "You will lose the thing that you love most tomorrow." It turns out that Prince had a horse named Garland, a quarter horse, and every night, every evening after work, he would ride the horse. So he loved this animal. The next day, it got hit by a car and was killed. So yeah. That's an example of the kind of science that was going on. Weird.
No, I've had very similar experiences with that. I feel like my mom had a lot of attachments and like darkness around her. She got sick and was in a lot of pain. She had like ALS, so she had a lot of physical, mental pain. And I tend to believe that most illnesses is demonic. I do think that, and maybe not all. I'm not a doctor. Yeah. I'm not trying to. I mean, I'm so sorry, YouTube or whatever. But I'm just saying. Like, I felt like there's a lot of darkness around her, and I prayed at her house. I kicked it out of her house. And she passed away a little bit after that. Like the same experience you're saying, like the way they take what you love the most, and they try to turn you into this terrible person out of pain. And Lord knows I'm being tested. I mean, she passed in March and it's June, and it's been the worst time of my entire life.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
But I feel, thank you. But, and I'm not trying to push that feeling on you. I'm just describing that I experienced that exact same thing. My mom was like my best friend, and like literally, like darkness stole that from me. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be crazy. Like I did blame God the first week. I'm not going to lie to you. I got really mad at God, and then how I would a parent or something. How I'd be mad at my dad or something. You know, how I'd be mad at my mom or something.
Yeah.
But like I still love God. I still love Jesus. Yes. But I was very disappointed they let that happen. Mm-hmm. Like to be honest with you. But then like I realized I'm yelling at the wrong team. I'm realizing that darkness is like darkness preys on that, and it was just. It destroyed my family, like after my grandfather died, and then it took my mom from me recently, and it wants to prey on my pain and make me a terrible person, but I'm not going to fall for that, and I
That's
think
right.
I pray more now, because it is worse now, but I still pray. It's like Book of Job, you know. It's like no matter what you throw at me, I'll still serve God, and I'll still serve Christ, and that's kind of how I feel, and I think it made me stronger to a degree.
Yes.
But very, very bitter in a lot of ways that I'm fighting. You know, I'm definitely fighting that constantly. And just I've experienced that exact same thing you're talking about.
Yes. And by the way, as you mentioned, anything religious, whether it's a crucifix or whether it was a priest walking into the room or holy water, anything would go absolutely berserk. And the thing that it feared most, I have a quote from Prince. This is actually from the doctor's notes.
Prince the artist?
Prince, Dr. Morton Prince was one of the doctors that treated her.
Okay.
Yeah. So he says, putting my finger to her forehead, I held up a cross, reciting the words from the rites of exorcism. The effect was remarkable. She shrunk from me like Mephistopheles, shrinking from the cross, cursing God and the saints and all things holy, screaming that it made a terrible, painful sensation run through her body. She feared it more than anything. Isn't that incredible?
That is. I've seen the opposite too. Cut me off if I'm talking too much because you're the guest. No. But I'm saying I'm just being honest. But to add context, I think my mom was supposed to pass away 3 years ago almost. Like this weird feeling I have because she did in the hospital. And she even told me like an after body experience of seeing her body and people be sad about her. Uh-huh. And like, okay, I played What a Friend We Have in Jesus by Alan Jackson.
Yeah.
And then a pastor came in who was doing a routine prayer for people that didn't even believe it. I could tell they didn't even believe it. And they prayed for her. And I go, God bless you. And they looked at me and they go, God bless you. And you could tell it was the first time all day they believed it. They believed they're out of their routine, and then she came back from that basically, it was a disaster the whole time. But I watched her come back when I think she was supposed to pass away, which is crazy, and I think I was gifted more years, or she was rather. But uh, me as well, because it is my mom. But it's like, I think I was gifted more years out of that, and it was really weird. I became like super Christian, like watching my mom get sick. It definitely changed me. Like I was already kind of like, I was on that bandwagon a little bit, but it brought me closer through pain and through tragedy, I think. And I think people that are possessed by demons take the opposite route.
Exactly. Question about it. They surrender.
Yeah.
And not only they surrender with relish,
They hate. I don't even want to say these words, but they hate God, man. And like, yeah. and that's crazy to me. I don't even like saying those words out loud. Mm. But I don't understand it. And I think our job. Are you a Christian as well? I assume.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our job as Christians is actually to pray the demons out of people. And in the Bible, it says that.
Yes.
And we have the ability to do that ourselves just by being Christians. And I think that's very important. Because in America, everybody thinks you just need an expert. You know what I mean? Like if something happens, I better call an expert. In certain cases, which is true. But I think we have the power of Christ within us, and we are able to exercise that.
I think that's true. A question I have for you: have you ever met a happy atheist?
No, not at all.
You won't, because at the end, they reject hope. They reject hope. The it's like starting a race, with two cement things on your ankles. You know, you're starting the race with the bad premise. I mean, look around you. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about something you might enjoy. I believe in a spiritual world, and I believe that in the spiritual world there is good and evil. It's binary. So just like here, it's not different. We are made in the image of that world, the spiritual world.
Yes, sir.
And there is a battle that goes on moment to moment for the souls of human beings, and I think that has a lot to do with demonic possession. It has a lot to do with the mystery of goodness, mystery of evil. But there's also a mystery of goodness. So how do you get it, Jack the Ripper, or somebody, a demonic possession like Clara Fowler? But on the other hand, you have a Mother Teresa. On the other hand, you have a guy that jumps on a grenade to save the rest of his platoon, where they do, acts that of kindness that, that defy evolution, defy Darwin. Because Darwin says we're all about survival. Everything we do is about survival. But that just isn't true.
No, it's not very Christian either. He's like basically like the verse of the day in my Bible thing says, for to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the spirit is life and peace. Mm-hmm. If you're only focused on survival in the flesh, I mean, you're not living in God, really. You're not living in the spirit world. And then something you brought up earlier about her not remembering in lapses, I also think they do that through drinkers. Basically, it's like alcohol is alcohol in Arabic, which basically, so it's like it's just it puts you less in tune with your soul and spirit, basically, and I think that your true essence, rather. And I think people that black out drinking are possessed most of the time. I think most of the people, that's when the demon takes over the driver's seat, and then they do all these things they pretend they don't want to do, at the very least, but at the most they don't want to do, and it's always an excuse like, did you do all these things you that are against your integrity and personal values? Or, I must have been blacked out. It's like always an excuse. I think that's where demons sit in too. I think you're right.
That's what I meant when I said, and what Hogson meant when he said in subtle ways. So it isn't always something you say, oh my God, look at this demonic presence. It isn't like that. I met a guy, I hate to tell you bad stories, but as a cop, and since we're talking about demonic possession, there was a guy that I transported who took angel dust and took a mop ringer and beat a woman to death with it. And he had no memory of it. No. And at the end, you have to wonder if this drug doesn't strip away your consciousness, your barrier to doing stuff like that, and let a force in. And that's why maybe you wouldn't remember it. Lizzie Borden, for example, who's part of my book, she had no memory of killing her parents with an axe. A guy 4 miles down the road from her, this would have been, in Fall River, Massachusetts, where Clara Fowler came from.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing. he came in and with an axe and butchered his boss's wife.
What this was the town name place, again?
Juan Cari Arrow was the man that did the second
murder.
Sorry.
The town. What town was this? Fall River.
Fall River, Massachusetts.
I thought, okay.
That's where Lizzie Borden, Cari Arrow, this was a place that had no murders for 50 years. And by the way, I think you're probably thinking right now about the satanic cult that was discovered in the 1970s. Yeah. There was a satanic cult from 1979 to 1980. And there were murders involved. And by the way, in this book, one of the things that you find out is that in her possessed state, Clara Fowler committed murders. She murdered both of her siblings, no memory of it whatsoever. And there was a satanic cult operating that her father was part of.
Have you been to that area of Massachusetts?
Yeah.
That's where that's close to like where the witch trials were and like all this. I mean, yes.
It's got a horrible history.
And horrible energy too, man. Like I drove through. I mean, I always thought the witch trials were all BS and stuff. You learn about them in school and stuff. You're like, whatever. Those people are just crazy. And you have the ergot theory of them hallucinating and stuff.
Salem witch trials.
Yeah. So when I went through Massachusetts, you felt that that shit felt haunted, bro. It literally not just from like a not just from a subconscious like I paint my own reality kind of way, but it like energy wise, that place felt bad. Fall River was one of those places I cut through, and that felt bad. Massachusetts feels haunted, bro. I mean, I don't know about Boston, but Boston's just a city, but I think like the rural
Fall
areas.
Fall River is a special place.
Yeah,
Fall River is a special place.
It felt evil, bro. I mean, I cut through there. I mean, Massachusetts feels evil. I mean, that's weird that's where that all happened. You almost have to go there to experience it. I mean, close to it. Yeah. I mean, what is it, a couple hours away? But I mean, you have to. I mean, you almost have to experience that state to understand like the evil that has happened there, because it just sounds ludicrous till you see it. I mean, I feel ludicrous saying it right now. I mean, but literally seeing it's like it was bizarre, man. Like it was definitely a bizarre like area.
Well, you know, Prince had a stenographer for all of the sessions. So the hypnotic sessions with this woman when she was in her demonic state. So there are long dialogues that transpired between the doctors.
Do you have some of
that? I'm sorry?
do you have some of that? Like the dialogue?
Oh, yeah. It's all in the book.
That's awesome.
I based a book on it. So here, you want to hear something from the devil's point of view?
Definitely. Yeah, I would love to.
Let me see if it'll take me a second.
Yeah, sure.
Here's what, so the doctor is asking, like, you know, why are you doing this to this woman, you know? And the answer is, why do I bother with a pathetic bitch like Clara Fowler? I do it because it's my job. God is dead. Jesus is in hell. Yet moment to moment, we fight for the souls of humans, sometimes by the thousands, often one at a time, each a small or momentous victory. And we celebrate those victories. Truly we do. And then the doctor says, and God, a tired general, incompetent, blithering, angels have lost their faith in him. Knowing the power of the forces I command, it crept toward the doctor now. Another secret. Most are borderline, but occasionally we come upon a special case. Lizzie Borden, H.H. Holmes, Jack the Ripper, countless others whose names you'll never know. And these, by their own choosing, become me, evil incarnate, prowling the earth with one purpose, to reduce God's so-called creations to the brutish animals I know them to be. How's that for powerful?
That sounds like the goal. I feel like those guys are just sad, bro. I feel like the fallen angels are just sad. Like their energy is really kind of like painful and sad. Like whenever I like,
whenever ambitious, I see them, but vicious. But
oh,
vicious.
It is. Oh, it is. And compared to a human, it's like, you know, it's like us fighting a rabbit, you know, it's like, I mean, we're not prepared for that battle. I mean, you know what I mean? We're not for that battle really. We are in a way, like our soul is, but I mean, yeah, you could trick, if you're like centuries old versus a human, I mean, you're going to, I mean, it's not even fair to us really.
Exactly.
But I think through Jesus and I think through God,
the other thing too, and this is, I think, a religious premise that maybe we could agree on. We have free will.
Yes, I do.
And that's why he says by their own choosing. In other words, if you reject this stuff, it can't violate you. It can't get past the barrier of free will. But if you say, well, you know, this isn't so bad, you know, this, you know, I kind of like, you know, getting high all the time, kind of like losing my mind, kind of like doing evil stuff. And it gets morphs deeper and deeper and deeper until you literally surrender entirely. And that's not everybody.
You're right.
That's the mystery of evil, I think.
No, I quit smoking for a long time, and then I do it to not be so depressed and stuff. But I think I do see how like little by little you're giving in to like the world or whatever. I do see that, and I think sin by sin they get you closer to that. And I think that I definitely don't want to be getting intoxicated much longer or anything like that. I think it's foolish as far as like a Christian man. I think it's very foolish for me. But I think time and place, and I think like. It helps me not just be like depressed all day about, you know, losing my mom and other things like that. So I think like it's a medicine for now, or at least I'd usually tell myself that.
You might not consider yourself a tech expert, but that doesn't mean you can't protect yourself from online scammers with a little help from McAfee Total Protection. Whether it's a fake missed delivery text or an urgent bank alert, these scams can look incredibly convincing. That's where McAfee Total Protection steps in. So go ahead, manage your finances and shop online. McAfee will help keep your device's privacy and identity safer. Visit McAfee.com/online protection today to get award-winning online protection for just $39.99 your first year. That's McAfee.com/online protection. Cancel anytime. Terms apply.
But I am very self-aware that it's foolish. I think you're easier to trick when you're intoxicated. I mean by people and spirit, the spiritual world. I mean, it's not a long-term plan for a person that wants to live righteously, I don't think, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, this I'll say too. I mean, I don't know that I'm not a puritanical guy. I mean, I'll have a beer. I'm watching a boxing match or something. I'll have a beer with the next guy. But that's a different story. I think
all beer is different than intoxication. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, having a beer or having a glass of wine after dinner or something, that's one thing. Just getting blind drunk and not knowing and losing all sense of perspective and reality, that's quite another.
I agree. And I think that I think. No, I was just in my personal journey. I would like to just not do any of it. I think ultimately, like in a month or so, but I'm saying like, no, I think that's, I mean, my buddy Brian, he's like an exorcist, and he tells me that like marijuana is almost like burnt offerings. Like cigarettes and marijuana are basically burnt offerings. And most of the world, I don't know about most of the world. Most of the people I talk to don't even believe in God. Like when I talk to them now, I think the world's almost, I mean, a lot of my friends do. I mean, you're friends with people that have common ground and all that stuff. But I mean, when I talk to these kids or like, I do comedy or something like that, like I'll do comedy to a couple hundred people. I'm like, who believes in Jesus Christ? Who believes in God? And like, no one will answer me. And I go, and I'll be like, deny my name on earth and they'll deny your name in heaven. Like, who believes in Jesus? And they'll literally just be like, one person will like tops, like out of hundreds of people, one person literally will claim that God is real. And like, that's the generation we're in, I think, right now.
Well, you know, I told you I wrote a book about, of course, The Unwelcome, about demonic possession, which is just out. But I wrote a book a number of years ago about alien abduction and the connection between demonic possession and alien abduction is quite incredible.
We were talking about that earlier. Really, that's fascinating. That is super fascinating.
I can give you a couple examples if you like.
Definitely.
Like from Mojave incident. And then from The Unwelcome. So the demonic possession case and the alien abduction case. So for example, let me just find this. For example, smell. I mean, smell is something that they talk about. And this is what one says. So this is how Clara Fowler describes the demon. And then I'm going to read to you what the Hesses in the Mojave describe the aliens. And let's see the comparison. So this is Clara Fowler. He's not human. His eyes are red as hot coals. His face savage looking, as if a maddened animal, a jackal or pig, and a human were combined. Now here's the alien abduction of aliens. She watched the red eyes move close enough so that their dwarfish bodies became apparent, like gremlins, no larger than 3 feet in height, with heads the size of a cat. The creatures reveled around with boundless energy. Their red eyes pierced the night as a pack of them tumbled and frolicked like child monsters. So red eyes, you know, this thing.
Very similar.
Now smell. This is what Clara Fowler says when the demon is with her. And the scent, I can tell when it's near by the scent of sulfur that precedes it. This is what the Hesses say about the aliens. It was then they became aware of the smell, a rank chemical odor like burning rubber. It was sulfur, Steve decided. Isn't that something?
No.
Now, the one last one, and this is very hopeful, I think, because in both of these cases, they are sort of resurrected. She's cured, the woman with demonic possession, and the people with the alien abduction experience get saved by an angel. So here are the descriptions. Wow. So here's Clara Fowler describing the Virgin Mary. The Virgin is surrounded by light, brighter than I've ever seen. Her face and eyes, the tenderness in her voice, meant to give us comfort. That is the way the Virgin wants me to see her, as a comforter, someone I can always count on. So surrounded by light, brighter than, et cetera. Here is what they describe in the alien abduction case. The virulence they, demons, inflicted was ushered out by a new, totally translucent presence. Unmistakably feminine, they watched in astonishment as the smoke-white swirling form descended, a being that in other times, notice in other times, would have been called an angel, radiant, exquisite in appearance, her lucid robe flowing as she floated gracefully toward them. It's all right. I'm here now to protect you. Be at peace. It's almost over. The Hesses called that angel their comforter. Just like Clara said, that is the way the Virgin wants to see us, as a comforter. Isn't that kind of incredible? I mean, these stories, even the language and the descriptions, you know, it seems to me that a curtain is kind of removed in certain circumstances. And you see what reality really is. And what reality really is spiritual.
I definitely agree. And like, excuse me. I already thought this correlation, like we were talking earlier. I've already thought that the interdimensional beings were demons, not aliens, prior. But your correlations are very interesting. Like, I did not, I've never heard like literal transcripts of people describing the same thing in a different like prop.
100 years separated by 100 years.
Yeah, and I wonder how long they've been fooling. I mean, I guess the entire. I mean, the story's written. I guess they've been fooling us for a long time, but it's like that's very fascinating. That and my exorcist friend always told me that he goes those are not ghosts. Like when I told him I smelled my grandfather, my grandfather had a distinct clone smell, and I smell it time to time, and I did for a while. Mm-hmm. He goes, "That's not your grandfather. That's a demon, bro. Your grandfather's in heaven." Like, I mean,
the great deceiver.
Yeah. So they use all these. I don't know. I don't understand what the premise is.
And many people look at this whole alien abduction thing as, again, a deception where we substitute technology for spirit.
Yeah, that's happening a lot right now. What you just said, like repeat that one. That was a beautiful one. What was that?
We're substituting technology for spirit.
That is amazing, and that is 100% what we're doing in this generation. Like, we think we give all this credit to AI and all this other different stuff, and it's definitely what we're doing.
But you know, all the physicists, there's a guy, we talked about evolution. We could talk about like Newtonian physics. You know, you drop an apple and it's going to fall to the ground.
Yeah.
None of that's true. Sir Francis Crick, who was the founder of DNA, he won the Nobel Prize for Science, said the chance that evolution created human beings, you know, like a microbe in the water in a swamp goes over the years and you wind up with a human being, it's as unlikely as a tornado going through a junkyard and leaving behind a 747 jet that takes off and flies to Europe. There is no chance that evolution created human beings.
Yeah. Most of its premise is kind of BS. Like, oh, what, tortoises look different on the Galapagos Island? Like, I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's like
it's a minor modification. You're talking about the creation of human beings, right?
Yeah. I mean, the best argument against evolution in the way Newton or Darwin wrote it is more or less monkeys still exist. That's like the best argument. And the last 4 years has really shown me that like science is BS. Like a lot, not all of it, but a lot of it.
A lot of it. They just throw names. As a matter of fact, the doctor that wrote a book, I have a copy of it. This is from 1906. And it's the doctor, Dr. Prince, that wrote about this case. And at the end, he couldn't call it demonic possession because he's one of the fathers of American psychiatry, right? So he's not going to say she's possessed by demons. But all of the symptoms are incredibly point in that direction. He just called it dissociation. He just gave it a name.
Yeah.
He just gave it a scientific name and said that, well, she was suffering from trauma because of her past, the satanic cult, etc., and it divided her personality into a demonic and a saint-like figure. And the way she was cured was not even the exorcism, and certainly wasn't the psychiatric treatment. The demon just really at the end said, you know, I don't have time for this. I did what I wanted to do. So long. He said, this is what's going to happen to you, the doctor. This is what's going to happen to you, another doctor. This is what's going to happen to you. This is what's going to happen to you. And then he left, and the girl fell to the floor. But everything that he predicted for the scientists, at the end of what happened in their life. You know, one guy died within the year. Another guy wound up marrying the woman that was possessed. The doctor wanted to overshadow Sigmund Freud and be famous for psychiatry. He wound up being famous for writing a book about demons, just exactly the opposite of what he wanted. So this was all predicted prior to the demonic presence just leaving.
That's crazy. No, it's you got my head spinning, bro. That's a lot of interesting like things. And I think that, I mean, there's most people don't even believe they're real. I mean, if I was to ask people, they probably wouldn't publicly. Well, here's the thing. They're either afraid to admit it's real or don't believe it's real. So I imagine most people don't even take the devil seriously. And he is doing work on this world, man. I mean, it, like you could literally just take the book of Revelation and throw a dart at it and read a verse and be like, wow, that sounds like it's happening. That sounds like a news story. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I mean, it's just not it's definitely a crazy time. And I have several beliefs that tend to line up with what you're saying. And I think that I definitely think there's demons. I mean, that's the best thing they could do. I mean, like that. What's that one quote? Like, the smartest thing the devil ever did is make people think he didn't exist or something.
You know, it's funny you're saying that. I was waiting for you to stop talking. And that's exactly what I was going to say. Whenever you gave me a sec, I was going to say it's Baudelaire who wrote a play called a poem called The Flower of Evil. And that's exactly what he said. The greatest trick the devil ever played was making people believe he didn't exist. Isn't that a great quote?
It is, and it's very true. And like it didn't, when I was a kid, it seemed foolish, but and then I realized I got old and I realized I was foolish. I mean, like, I didn't think any of that. I didn't believe any of that. I was never introduced to religion. I was never pushed into religion or a church or anything like that. So I came to it in my own conclusion. I mean, it came to me. I felt like I was draft picked by Jesus. You know what I mean? You kind of selected, I guess, as a Christian, in my opinion. Like a true Christian is you typically selected from the people I talk to and what I've found. And some people were raised in it have always been good. Like, I know some people like that too. But I mean, it definitely seems like were you always a Christian more or less? Like,
I was raised a Christian. Yeah,
raised Catholic.
But I have to say, over the last, since this book, it's become much more evident to me that this world doesn't really exist.
Doesn't.
It doesn't really exist. And I'll tell you, Anthony, this is something that's important, I think. You don't have to approach it from a religious standpoint. These days, you can approach it from a scientific standpoint. I just finished reading a book by a physicist, and it's called The Case Against Reality. And what he says, and a lot of scientists think now, is that the human brain doesn't take information in and interpret it. It's a screen that keeps you from reality so that you can get food, so that you can, you know, go to sleep, so that you can procreate, etc. Because otherwise it would blow your mind. If you saw what reality really was, So the brain's purpose is to focus you in on survival, physical survival. That's what the brain is there for. And his case is that we see so little of what's real that at the end there's a zero chance that what we see is real. Now, if that's the case, and if there's a zero chance that what we see is real, well, what's the alternative? It's things you don't see. And things you don't see are supernatural.
I agree. And I think this is a very rudimentary simulation. I think it's God simulation. And I think there's certain things that do exist technically, but it's all just this is all just to see. It's a test of our souls. That's what I've kind of gathered. It's all to see how we act in situations.
Exactly.
Earth almost feels like a reality show. It almost feels like a soul reality show where we're just being watched by. It definitely is.
Yeah. He says this physicist, his name is David Hoffman, that let's say you look in a mirror, you see your face. That's what we see, just an image. But behind that face are thoughts, loves, hates, politics, religion, mathematics, opera, baseball. We see is the image, the face. But behind that face is what's real.
Wow. Yeah,
but think about it. All of those things are invisible. Show me a thought. Show me a thought, you know?
That's
show me
a
concept. You know, show me a dream. I mean, most of what we are is invisible. Oxygen. I mean, even light. People can't define light. They say it's waves of energy, whatever, but you can't see infrared light. You know, you can't see microwaves. You can't see radio waves.
We're just a bunch of cavemen trying to describe what's going on. Like we have no idea, bro. I mean, we have some ideas.
Look, you ask an atheist, where did we come from? And he's going to tell you, I suppose, maybe. Well, there was a swamp and, light, and it was just a coincidence, and there's enough heat and this and that, and the embryo became a frog, and the frog, it's really ludicrous. It's really ridiculous. Where's the fossil chain? Show me the stages that had to go through. Where it's a ridiculous concept.
Yeah, the atheist tends to and this isn't an attack. I don't know if people are taught of their own beliefs in America. I believe that.
But
just being real, But I do think the atheist is easiest to fool. They basically don't believe in anything, and they won't believe the Bible because. And here's the thing, I bet they believe the Bible. I bet they're mad at God. I mean that's how I view it. Because they'll argue if you bring up Jesus or God around an atheist, they get mad. And that's what evil does. Evil is terrified of that man that walked the earth, man. He is terrified. And I even heard a story I was going to bring up too when you talked. You referenced something earlier that was interesting. The reason I even have a lot of my Catholic friends make fun of me for wearing a rosary around my neck because they're like, oh, that's not where you wear it or whatever. But I basically, and some Catholics will get on me about that. But and they're right in the ritual. That's not where you put it. But I heard. Okay, it was the guy who interviewed the survivor of a Ted Bundy murder. He interviewed her and basically interviewed Ted Bundy later, and the story lined up that Ted Bundy was going to kill this girl who fell asleep with a rosary in her hand, and I don't know if you know the story or not, but something grabbed Ted Bundy and threw him like whenever he came for that girl that had the rosary around her, it came at him and threw him. And my mind keeps making all these excuses. When I travel a lot, so I have some certain of my mail delivered to other places for context. I got in an argument with my friend that day and told him, burn my mail. I don't need it anymore. And he's such a better person than me. He still showed up after the argument, gave it to me, and the rosary was in the mail with it. You know what I mean? So my own thoughts will betray me and try to get me to do all these crazy things, like out of pain or whatever. And my head will try to get me to take it off sometimes. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. Like, I don't want that level of protection away from me.
Yeah.
I think it's very strong. I think, and a lot of Christians will get on me because, like, they'll be like, well, Jesus is still on the cross in your depiction. He got off the cross. I'm like, obviously, I know that. You know what I mean? This is just a they'll get on me. Like, these Christians will get on me about it. Like, he rose from the cross. I'm like, I'm very aware of that.
I figured that out already, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is just part of the story of the show, is sacrifice what he already did for us. You know what I mean? Like getting off the, I mean, like resurrecting was probably way easier than being crucified. And I think the crucifixion was the sacrifice.
By the way, Anthony, have you seen anything on the newer investigations into the Shroud of Turin?
Oh yeah, the blood, the double helix and stuff.
How about this one? So they use. You remember they had problems with the, first of all, no one could, it wasn't painted. You know, so no one could reproduce it, et cetera, et cetera. But definitely they did real carbon dating, and there had been a fire, and they used a very small section, and there had been restorations to the shroud and the edges and stuff, and there had been carbon from the fire. It was a major fire that actually burnt some of the shroud. So they say that skewed the carbon dating, which makes sense. They have a more accurate way of testing the age of linen, and it's called multi-angle x-ray. And in April of 2022, they studied it, and they studied the structural degradation of linen, the cellulose in the linen. And what they came to was that it was from the time of Christ, for sure. And the other was that it was radiation that caused the image. Not radiation from outside, but radiation from the body itself. And wow. So the shroud might well be the moment of resurrection.
Wow.
Is that stunning? I'll give you another one that's really worth seeing, because we're talking about the spirit world versus a corporal world, right? So think about this. In Zatoum, Egypt, and you can go on YouTube and see this, Zatoum, Egypt, from April 1968 to 1971, a woman, luminous, dressed in white, was on the bell tower of St. Mary's Church in Egypt. It appeared two or three times per week. It was witnessed by the president of Nasser of Egypt at the time, seen by over 250,000 people over the course of 3 years. And if you see these photos, these images that policemen took and people took, they're all over the place. It's not like, you know, there's one thing. It's stunning. It's the Virgin Mary. I mean, it's clearly exactly what the Hesses described and exactly what Clara Fowler described. Isn't that amazing? But go to YouTube and put Marian Visitations Egypt, and you'll be stunned. There's another one too, which of
one
course.
One second, brother. Paul McCartney claimed that some of his lyrics say that, like Mother Mary came to me and sing, wishing words of wisdom or something, or whatever. I forgot the exact wording. Paul McCartney wrote about that a lot too. Sorry, go. I just want to add.
Yeah. So the other one that's you know, again, one of these sort of miraculous situations is Fatima in Portugal in October 1917. These three girls, shepherdesses, said that they saw the Virgin Mary five times. And sixth time, they said, well, you know, everybody says we need proof. They don't believe us, etc. Virgin Mary says, I will show you proof on the sixth visit. The sixth visit happened. It's pouring rain. And a tremendous number of people, 30,000 people or something, showed up. And it was called the Miracle of the Sun. Extraordinary solar activity. The sun was dancing in the sky. There were multicolored lights. Radiant, the sun seemed to like up, and the clothes, people's clothes were dry. This was Fatima, October 1917. So there are these things that really are inexplicable, and I feel like they're like peaks beyond the veil into the real world.
No, I agree. That's very interesting. Like, I don't think we know what we're up against. And I don't think most people know what we're up against. And I just said a loss of words, man. I just think that it's a crazy time, man. Like,
it is a crazy time. And you know, there's an interesting thing that Jack the Ripper, is a character in this book, because again, we're talking about people becoming the devil incarnate, and Jack the Ripper is actually a character in this. Here's a quote from Jack the Ripper. In one of the letters he wrote,
He used to taunt the press, right?
He wrote a letter to the city marshal in Fall River, who was investigating the Lizzie Borden murders and the Juan Carriero and the Fowler murders. Jack the Ripper actually wrote a letter to him saying there was more than one killer, and it's in a museum there in Fall River. It's on display in a museum, the Lizzie Borden Museum. But this is what Jack the Ripper says. One day men will look back and say, I gave birth to the 20th century. Think about that.
That sounds like a demon for sure, bro. that's just raw pride and ego. That's crazy. And all that dude did was kill people. I never understood the concept of people thinking killers were brilliant people just because they murdered people. It never made sense to me. Like, there's all these documentaries about, like, oh, serial killers are the most highly intelligent people. I'm like, because they murder people? Like, that's a sign of intelligence? That's a sign of lack of values. If anything, it's a sign of...
And by the way, just as a former cop, I can tell you, most murders happen between spouses or family or close friends or something within a very small radius. The murders that are very difficult to solve are like hitmen, where you get a guy from Detroit that comes to California and kills somebody in Sacramento because there's no connection. There is no, you know, way of connecting them. So serial killers, very similarly, to kill strangers and not be caught for a period of time is no great. I don't think so either.
You know? I've never thought that. I've always thought people are crazy that thought that. I'm like, so like I think people that think that are too afraid to kill people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't do it out of fear. I do it because it's a terrible thing to do. The impact you do to others. I mean, you have to think about that. Like, okay, so if one of us are murdered, like, just I mean, think of how many people, and that's just one example. Think of how many people are affected by our deaths. You know what I mean? Like our family members, our friends, anybody, people that read your books, people that watch my podcast. I mean, so you're affecting more than one person through your selfish act of having no values and sin. And that's what it's preying on. It's preying on the pain you will create from this one activity. That's what it's preying on. I mean, from my perspective, I think any coward can sin. Any coward can be a terrible person. It takes a very strong person to live in the world and be of God, I think.
You want to hear an interesting thing about God and aliens? This is from my book, The Mojave Incident, and I'm going to try to find these page numbers so that we can do this. But it won't take long. I think it's 202. Here.
And you don't have to worry about it taking long, bro. That's why I have you on the show. Like, you're an interesting person. Okay. You have interesting work. I'm just letting you know. That's why I'm here.
Right here. The psychiatrist goes, do you have any idea what these beings want? They want to make contact with the population. Steve and I are specimens, imperfect like the human race. When we're ready to communicate with them face to face, then the world will be too. They have to study our reactions so they know how to approach us. They don't have emotions like ours. So we need to teach them. They need to understand humans. Do you have a sense of where they come from? There are galaxies. Theirs is the closest. In order for five galaxies to work together one day, they have to start, and they're starting with us, so we'll be united. What else do you know? I know where the universe ends. Is that something you can put in words? Our universe ends where theirs begins. Our universe ends when all its matter stops mattering to us and starts mattering to them. Isn't that wild? So I'll read it again. Our universe ends where theirs begins. Our universe ends when all its matter stops mattering to us and starts mattering to them. Just check this out. So then, Dawn, why do you think there are things you don't want to remember? I don't know. Is there something preventing you from sharing the thoughts? I can't tell you. If these beings are in contact with you, tell me what you know about them. Listen to this. God created our world in his image, but not theirs or any of the others. Are there many different kinds of beings? Yes, different ones, different hybrids. When do you think this communication will happen between aliens and humans? I don't know. In my lifetime, how long will you live? In a normal man's lifetime, in our children's, she answers. Are we watched as a population regularly? Yes, by many different beings, sent on missions from the One Supreme. What does that mean? There's one supreme being that controls all of them. He sends missions here. They're not here of their own accord. Is this like a president? Like a god?
No.
Made in.
They're all telling the made, same story.
God made us in his image, but not them. Think about that. What are you talking about? What is she talking about?
They're constantly telling the same story. There's so many different stories telling the same story.
Telling the same story in different words, but I mean, it's pretty clear. And then, by the way, well, how can we learn more about this? And you know what she answers? Read the Bible. This is under hypnosis, by the way. She's hypnotized during this time.
That's true. It's true.
I find it stunning because this didn't start out as anything to do with religion or theology or anything like that. This was about alien abductions, you know, about extraterrestrials. But even guys like David Grush, who testified before Congress last year, I mean, he doesn't call them extraterrestrial. He calls them non-human entities. He calls them interdimensional beings.
That's what they are.
What are angels? What are devils?
No, I agree. I agree 100% on that. And like, we'll have to do an episode comparing that eventually too. That's such a fascinating thing. And it correlates with both your books too. So that could be interesting cross promo too. But I think that I definitely think that's good. And like we're about the hour mark because I feel like I try to keep these about an hour. I talked to you for 9 more hours. If you ever want to come back on here, man, like so you're a fascinating guy. I love your work.
Thank you, Anthony. That's fine. Can I show my book?
Obviously, that's what I was gonna get to. That's exactly what I was getting to.
That's the book.
That's good. Welcome. Where can people find this book? Amazon, other places?
Yeah, Amazon. It's called The Unwelcome, the Curious Case of Clara Fowler. And it's available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But Amazon's the easiest, I think. Or in bookstores if you want them to order it. So The Unwelcome by Ron Felder.
Awesome, brother. That's fascinating. I'm going to look that up in audiobook. That's going to be one
of my audiobook.
I'm going to put that on my list. I got about 2 more books ahead, but I'm going to put that on my list where I check that out and stuff. And I'd love to have you back on. Honestly, we could probably compare aliens to demons for like hours, and I think that'd be fascinating.
Oh, for sure. I haven't even gotten into it, nor have you, the Bible.
No, that's amazing. And like but I'm going to get on here too, man. I appreciate you coming on here.
It was a lot of fun, Anthony. I enjoyed it.
Me too, brother. That hour blew by, man. And I appreciate you, and I'll be in touch, man. And thank you all for watching
Thanks
this.
So much.
Thank you, Ron, for being here. Thank you all for watching this. I'm going to get out of here. Let on.
Take care, Anthony.